thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Brandis Freeman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at. Chicago's mayor heads to Springfield to meet with lawmakers before spring session comes to a close.
The DACA program said to these dreamers, here's your chance.
But delays in DACA renewals leave some recipients out of work and at risk for deportation.
We're gonna come and cook together right here in my kitchen in Chicago.
In a new cooking show, Indiana's Apple Pie explores Punjabi culture through food. First off tonight, Illinois State Police are investigating the fatal shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, who was killed by federal immigration agents last year. Villegas Gonzalez was stopped by ICE agents while driving in Franklin Park last September and allegedly attempted to flee when he was killed. Homeland Security officials claimed he intentionally struck and seriously injured an agent with his vehicle, though body camera footage reportedly captured that agent saying his injuries were, quote, nothing major. An ISP spokesperson confirmed an initial investigation is underway and that when complete, the case will be turned over to the Cook County State Attorney's Office. State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke's office says they will play a supportive role in the investigation. The investigation comes days after a state commission documenting misconduct allegations against federal agents urged local law enforcement to investigate further. And Brookfield Zoo employees are set to return to work after a two-day strike. Zoo leaders and union representatives say they reached a tentative agreement this morning. Workers walked off the job on Monday after the union and management failed to finalize a new contract agreement. According to the union, the proposed four-year deal includes a 20% wage increase, enhanced health care contributions, and improvements in staffing for the zoo's animals, care workers, and facilities, among other provisions. And in exciting news today, for the first time in over 100 years, an eagle has been born in Chicago. The eagle was documented at Park 597 on the city's far south side neighborhood of South Deering. The Chicago Park District made the announcement today, saying the district's volunteers and birders were monitoring the area since February and then spotted the chick April 28th. Oh, it's kind of cute. Officials are discouraging people from visiting the nesting site, saying it could have a negative impact on the budding family. But in honor of the historic moment, officials are announcing a naming contest for the city's new resident. You can find details about the contest on our website, as well as learn more about the Park District's habitat restoration efforts. Up next, DACA recipients face new red tape and risk. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Many DACA recipients are in legal limbo after thousands of renewal applications are facing delays. The program called the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals provides temporary residency status to undocumented immigrants brought here as children. But now the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is placing thousands of recipients' renewal applications on processing holds. Even though many applied months before their status expired, some of the dreamers have lost their work approval and deferred action protections, leaving them at risk of deportation. Here's Senator Dick Durbin this week on the status of the program.
We're in a much different world in the United States when it comes to DACA. A sad situation is that what was once a protection is being used against people, unfortunately. And many people who had confidence in their government when they signed up for this program now have questions as to whether or not they can survive and stay in the United States. The DACA recipients are the most vulnerable they've ever been, I think, in the history of the program.
And joining us to break down this issue is David Canola, a DACA recipient and Chicago Public School teacher. Nancy Garcia, Director of Civic Engagement at the Southwest Suburban Immigrant Project, a community organization that provides legal counseling to immigrants in DuPage and Will counties. And Isaias Perez, also a DACA recipient and Chicago Public School teacher. Well, thank you all for joining us. Nancy, I want to start with you. Walk us through the renewal process. What do folks have to do?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thank you again for the invitation. So the overall process in order to do the renewal is something that is unfortunately really complex. And it's something that our applicants have to do every 2 years, and technically they apply about 6 months before the expiration of their current work permit. So organizations like our organization, SSIP, that is located in Bolingbrook, along with a lot of other organizations that are part of the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, we provide legal representation for people to be able to help them with the overall process. At this time, we know that renewals are still happening and are still getting approved. We know that initial applications are not open right now for approval for community members. So what the process looks like is that when someone is, it's time for them to renew, they contact an organization that can go ahead and provide legal representation. So that way we can go ahead and review any information about their eligibility and determine if we can go ahead and help them apply. Thankfully, through organizations like ours and also other organizations with ICER, depending on funding at the state level, sometimes we're able to cover the fee for the renewal. The fee is very expensive. It's $600.
It depends on the case. Okay.
Correct.
I want to bring David in. David, you're a DACA recipient and your status doesn't expire until next year. Is there some type of uncertainty that you carry day by day, thinking about your status, your work, your future? Talk to me about that.
1,000%. And also, I want to thank you for having the opportunity to be here and amplify the voices of our community, which is still marginalized to this day. But long story short, my specific permit expires in March 2027. As I've been hearing from my family members, also friends from the community, all of us are concerned about these delays that Nancy just shared with us. Normally, like she mentioned, we would have had to apply those 6 months prior to the whole process of you getting your renewal. But as a recent, we haven't been receiving any responses up to like 9 months, sometimes even a year after, which obviously leaves a lot of us without a status in that time point period. A lot of my close friends have gone through the situation of where they've applied within the 6-9 month period, and then they don't end up hearing anything back, and then they end up losing their roles, which directly impacts their household because they're the breadwinners of that household. So me just listening from them personally, as I come to that deadline, I'm already thinking into applying now, even though technically I still have like almost 8-9 months until my worker's permit is expiring, simply because I don't want to have to deal with any of those issues. So definitely
concerned. That's what you see that our family members are going through. Mm-hmm. Isaias, what is it like for you?
Oh, it's a heavy feeling of uncertainty on a day-to-day basis, but it is a feeling that is not rare and is very familiar to us DACA recipients. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's something that we have learned, have to manage through. I'm in the same boat as David. My permit does not expire until next year. However, every day-to-day actions like renting an apartment or committing to certain professional events do make me rethink of like, oh, would I be able to fully commit myself to this? And it is the uncertainty more than any feeling, more than fear. It is the uncertainty and the lack of stability and be able to plan a 30-year future on a 2-year permit. And that is the most feeling that I think most DACA recipients can relate to at this point. And just the fear of what might happen in the future. Little by little, we have seen that they have taken some of the provisions away from DACA. And as for now, we can do is just wait and see what happens and raise awareness of people.
Of course. And Nancy, you oversee a legal clinic that helps DACA recipients, as you mentioned. What has it been like of the people who've come in? Have you seen multiple people facing these delays? What has that experience been like?
Yes, unfortunately, this is not something that is unique to any person. We have seen a lot of the clients that we helped them submit their DACA renewal since about the middle of November of 2025. And ever since, we have cases that are still pending. So they're outside the normal processing time of 105 days. Even some of them are getting close to 6 months. That the case has been pending, which is something that is different. Before November of 2025, cases were taking about a month and a half to 2 months on average to be approved. And we even saw cases being approved really fast, like less than 2 weeks. But that's not happening anymore.
Is it disappointing for you, David? I mean, as we know, many DACA recipients' livelihoods are connected to their jobs, right? What would it mean for those people to lose their livelihood?
The stability. You'll lose your peace of mind. Like I said, stability. And it's also a little frustrating because when the program came out back in 2012, we actually used to get 3 years before we had to renew. So it is a little frustrating that we continue to experience not only different pressures coming in, but also a lack of follow through with the promises that we were given, right? A lot of us, not only people in my specific scenario, we're thinking about what is the possibility of this becoming a pathway towards citizenship or a pathway towards more stability. So coming from those promises and then moving into now we got even less time with our workers permit. Now we're talking about the whole process of DACA as a whole is being undermined because we're getting kickback from different governmental parties as far as how protected are you because of this status, right? Like you have like a deferral action, but then we're hearing because of all the different deportation processes that are happening that even if you have DACA, that kind of puts you in limbo, right?
So then— And you were young when you came here, right? You were 10 years old.
I was 10 when I came, yeah. And then going through the different hurdles, like listening to all the different administrations, different promises, it is a little heartbreaking because then, like I can't speak for Nancy and for Isaias, I think is his name. But at least in my specific case, I've been waiting, you know, for that path of
the
like, okay,
pathway.
as long as we do our due diligences, as long as we stay according to law, in good faith, acting in good faith, we're going to receive something out of that. But we're still waiting. And like we stressed earlier, it's still concerning because we don't know where we're going to head with all of this. And at least for me specifically, I'm relocating to a completely new state. I grew up here in Chicago.
For your career.
I'm moving to New Mexico to start a doctoral program in the fall. But again, my permit expires in March next year. So now me thinking I'm planning on moving to New Mexico for the next 4 years, I had to look into like how New Mexico law functions in order to be able to feel a little more protected. But even then, we're still in limbo.
And Isaias, you are very outspoken also on social media about having DACA. And, you know, you use your platform to start conversations. What has that been like connecting with other people through social media who are also facing the same things that you are?
I think something that really has come from it is being able to find a sense of community and find other people that deeply understand you and where you're coming from. For the average person, they could sympathize and empathize with us, but they cannot really fully understand what we're going through. So social media has provided me with that path to be able to connect and let other people also connect with each other. And we'll continue doing that in terms of showing how it's not only affecting dreamers, it's also affecting our communities, our schools, it's affecting hospitals. People might think grocery stores, we have drivers. So we are very entwined in the American fabric, and the only solution that can come from it, it's a comprehensive legislative something that will—
Of course.
Turn this from it was supposed to be not a permanent solution. It was supposed to be a temporary solution, and we are past to that time, I believe.
And I want to quickly bring up a statement from the UCIS, from the spokesperson Zach Caller. He said, under the leadership of President Trump, USCIS is safeguarding the American people by more thoroughly screening and vetting all aliens, which can lengthen processing times. Nancy, what do you make out of this statement?
Thank you for that question. It's connected to the same rhetoric that we're hearing from the administration, that continues to justify some of their actions in the name of vetting community members and doing additional scrutiny or figuring out additional information about applicants. But the reality is that we know that the system is already very complex, and they are already doing a lot of background checks and screening for the participants, for the applicants.
Nancy, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you for all of your input.
Yes,
we're gonna have to keep going with this conversation some other time. Thank you. Up next, what's behind Mayor Brandon Johnson's trip to Springfield?
reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities. This story is part of Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices.
Brandon Johnson is in Springfield today, hoping to convince state lawmakers to ease the city's cash crunch and change focus. Our Heather Sharon joins us now to break it all down. And there's a lot to break down, Heather. So let's start with the clock ticking on the Illinois General Assembly spring session. Tell us what Mayor Johnson wants from state lawmakers.
Well, his number one priority with a bunch of other mayors from around the state is to convince lawmakers to reject Governor J.B. Pritzker's recommendation to reduce the amount of money states and towns get from the state's income tax. That proposal will cost Chicago $13 million that the mayor says the city needs to fund essential city services like police, fire, and road repair. But he also wants the ability to ask the city council to impose new taxes from what he says are progressive sources. That includes a new tax on digital advertising to Illinois and Chicago residents, a $1 surcharge on all deliveries that don't include groceries or medicine, and a payroll tax designed to tax the largest companies in Chicago. That proposal surfaced briefly last year before city lawyers determined the city needed approval from the state to even consider it.
And let's talk about the Chicago Bears, because they've been the hot topic, as we know. Now, the mayor's expected to tell state lawmakers their focus on the bill designed to help the Chicago Bears build a new stadium in Arlington Heights is misguided. What does he think they should be focused on?
Well, he wants them to focus on proposals that will make life more affordable for working-class residents. And he says giving the Bears the ability and other proposals of large developments the ability to reduce their property tax bills does nothing to help average residents who are struggling to pay their property tax bills. Now, the proposal that made it out of the Illinois House last month offers some respite for residents, but the governor's office says that it won't amount to a significant relief for anyone in Illinois. The mayor says that's not good enough. Also, he doesn't want the Bears to move to Arlington Heights. He wants them to stay in Chicago, insisting Soldier Field is the best place for the team. That seems like a long shot at this point, because the Bears have said that if this bill doesn't make it out of the General Assembly and is signed into law by Governor Pritzker, they're moving out of Illinois to Indiana.
I feel like at this point, we just need to know. Now, is the mayor likely to get what he wants before the session ends in less than, 3 weeks?
Yeah, so it's a big lift, right? The state doesn't have any extra cash lying around to sort of fill what the city needs. Also, lawmakers don't like voting for tax increases, even if they're just giving the city council the ability to impose those taxes. And as for the fate of the Bears, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, thank you, Heather, for breaking all that down.
Thanks, Jonna.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Indian food is one of the most popular cuisines in the United States, but for many home cooks, it's perceived as too challenging to make at home and something to be enjoyed solely at restaurants. Now, a new show, Indian as Apple Pie, is breaking down that misconception, proving that a handful of spices and a little confidence can go a long way. Now, joining us now here is the show's host, Anupi Singla, journalist and cookbook author. Thank you for joining us here in person. First of all, congratulations on a successful premiere. So I want to start, you were a journalist, and then you made your way into building this career of storytelling, and now you are the host of a cooking show. Now, tell me a little bit about how this became the story that you wanted to tell.
Well, you and I were just talking about this before the camera started rolling. I was a morning reporter in Chicago, and it was tough when the girls were young. The other factor that really contributed is my husband is a consultant, and so traveled Monday through Friday. So being a morning reporter and having two young girls and having to feed them. But it wasn't really just that. It was also that I'm an immigrant. I came to this country when I was three. My mother worked, but she always cooked Indian food every day. Whether we liked it or not, we had it on the table. And I just felt really bad that I couldn't do that for my girls. I was just so sleep deprived. And I always say on that morning shift.
That was a tough one, yes.
You're tired at the end of the day, and you have to get to bed on time, and I couldn't. And I just want to take a break and do it for my girls.
Almost felt like a reinvention, you would say. You also mentioned that you're not a professional chef, but you just talked about your mother. Is that where you learned how to cook?
Well, believe it or not, my mother didn't give me my original cooking lessons. It was my grandfather that would visit from his village in Punjab in India. And we grew up in Pennsylvania. So he would come and visit us. I would visit him in India. And I just loved sitting in the kitchen and sitting with him. He had all of these stories, and he was such a foodie in the family. He would travel hundreds of miles and bring recipes back. And so I just loved that concept of getting the spicing right and getting the taste profile right. And I have this real obsession about it. I just love it.
I can imagine you have so many stories of your grandfather. Mm-hmm. That sounds really special. Now, I actually want to play a clip of your show. Here you're cooking Punjabi chicken curry.
A North Indian Punjabi dish, lots of fiery chilies. You don't have to add them in if you don't want to, don't worry. You're cooking for you, you're not cooking for me, but I'm gonna show you how we actually do it. This has been simmering for about 40 minutes and it looks terrific. I can't wait to get in here and give it a try. The chicken that's kind of falling apart, it is so moist because of that yogurt marinade. Let's give it a try now. Let's see. That tastes absolutely perfect. It does not need any more seasoning. And now I'm gonna show you how to pair it with the perfect rice.
That looks really delicious. I think I mentioned to you that I have not had Indian cuisine for years, but how does it feel to bring culture dishes into people's homes?
Well, I love it. And being a little girl, when I was growing up in Pennsylvania, we lived in King of Prussia is where I grew up. And people didn't really know what Indian food was. There weren't a lot of grocery stores. There weren't a lot of places to get ingredients. So I think the best part of the process and journey for me is people really warm up to Indian food now. And so it just makes me feel so good because growing up, I had to kind of hide it from other people. I was embarrassed by it. And that's okay. Everybody that I went to high school now wants to learn how to cook Indian, which is wonderful. So it just feels like it really just came around. And I gave my girls the greatest gift. They could be proud of their culture through food.
Does that feel like a full circle for you?
It does, but there's so much more work to be done. Yeah. But I think, too, going to these small communities, Springfield, Champaign, they're not small communities, but also don't have a lot of Indian food. The way they embrace the cuisine is just so nice, and it just kind of warms my heart. It's really nice.
And talking about making Indian food, what would you say to someone who feels intimidated about starting a dish?
Okay, so you saw that chicken curry.
Yeah, I did see it.
You can use my recipe and make it. The key is getting the spicing right, and that's what I talk about. So people get intimidated thinking there's a lot of spices per dish. There are. But what I say is you use all of those spices again and again and again and just swap out the main ingredient if you're cooking from a certain region. So once you buy them and invest in them, you'll be able to make a lot of dishes. And there's a level of marinating, just putting those same spices together, stacking that flavor profile, one on top of another. And when you know the order in which to cook, I mean, you're going to have your own cooking
show.
I'm pretty sure.
Honestly, that chicken curry looked amazing. Now, you said your kids are growing up in a different America than you did. What stands out to you about that shift?
Well, I think that they can just be their own person, right? So growing up, I had to kind of hide that we were from India. There weren't a lot of Indians around. There are a lot of Indian Americans around now. And so I think that part of it is different. I think also they're more comfortable to just talk about who they are and embrace it. And I love that we were able to do that for them through food.
Did you feel like you weren't either from here or there? You know, there's that big slogan where it's like, I don't feel like I'm from here or from there.
Yeah, there is that, and I think it's perspective. So the way I started to look at it later in life was I have a choice to take the best of both worlds, the best of India, the best of America, and put it together. And that's, I think, the beauty of being an immigrant. I love it.
And what do your daughters say about you doing this?
They're like, Mom, I'm going to tell the world you're not cooking tonight. We're getting pizza. And I'm like, that's okay, too. Once in a while, you've got to step outside of the kitchen. But they actually love it. But they're a little more quiet about it. They don't like this stuff, right? Because it takes Mom away from them. So to them, I'm just mom, and they just want me to cook, and they love my food, which I just absolutely love.
Of course. What would you say? I know maybe this is the hardest question. What is your favorite dish to make?
I really think you just saw it. That chicken curry, oh my gosh, you'll make it, and you'll think, wow, I could open up an Indian restaurant. It's really that delicious and really not that complicated.
What would you say is the most basic meal that people can start off with?
I would take a really nice lentil, a dal. So basic dal. Just use the spices on the side, heat it up in a little oil or ghee, and then put it into that dal with a little onion, ginger, garlic, and that's it.
That's lunch for the week. That sounds really good. Well, thank you for joining us, and I can't wait to see more of your show, and I'm definitely making one of those recipes.
Thanks for having me.
And you can watch Indian as Apple Pie on WTTW Saturdays at 4 p.m. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports educational initiatives in the legal profession.